Welcome back, folks, to another fun-filled episode of the Nintendo Wirecast for Tuesday, August 4th, 2020. I am one of your hosts, Amiibo Jason, and as always, I'm with the amazing, the talented, the guy that is doing more things than I had no idea you were so talented. Hero TJ, I want you, if you can, and we talked about this last week to a certain degree, can you share any of the jobs you've had recently in Taiwan?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for that glowing intro. You definitely know how to flatter a man. I was lucky enough to do another job this past week. One of the interesting things about working in another country where you don't speak the language or read the characters is that I'm always flying a little bit by the seat of my pants because I don't really know exactly what is going on.
Yeah.
So a week ago, I got contacted by my agent. She says, hey, bring three different shirts, show up at this casting location, and that was it. That was all the information I had. I knew nothing else about it. So I get there, and nobody speaks English, literally nobody. And they put me in a makeup chair, and they spend like 15 minutes doing my makeup. And I was under the impression this was a casting, which means I don't have the job.
Yeah.
But they put a lot of effort into making sure I looked good. And then I moved from the makeup chair to the hair chair, and they started styling my hair. I'm like, okay, I have no idea what's going on. And then they just ushered me over to their little photo set. And the photographer snapped a picture of me, one picture of me full body, and then another picture of me close up. And then he goes, okay, go change clothes. Like, it moves me back over to the wardrobe people, and then I put on another outfit, do the same thing, another outfit, same thing. So three times. And I leave still having no idea what I even did. And then I go see my agent a few days later, and she's like, yeah, okay, you booked that job. I'm like, can I know what it is now?
Yeah, what was the job?
So I just shot it, and I don't know how much I could say about it because all of the paperwork is in another language and it has some confidentiality.
You don't want to get sued.
But it was a international tea commercial.
No way.
And it involved a lot of different models. They have a very international kind of appeal.
Yeah.
So on the day, I was one of five, and it was having to hold this beverage exactly in a certain spot for maybe a minute and a half. And then to try to see if I could reach my mouth to the straw and be able to actually drink it from where I needed to hold it from my hands. And I only did three takes, and that was it. That was the whole bit. But the most interesting thing about that one was I also struggle a little bit with navigating my way around. I'm okay if I'm using the MRT system, which is easy enough. But then once I get on foot, it's a little random because I can't read any addresses. And so this particular location was at a studio, but where the MRT spit me off was a very like industrial area. And I didn't see any studios, anything. It was like every other building was either a restaurant or a car dealership. Not a car dealership, a car repair shop.
Sure.
And in the middle of all this is this really small hole in the wall shrine, and it's not an uncommon sight in Taiwan to see shrines everywhere, and they're gorgeous. They have like these ornate dragon sculptures and phoenix sculptures everywhere, all on the outside. Some are quite grand, like they're as big as a mansion, and some are just like one tiny little room that looks like an open garage. And this was one of those small ones, but there happened to be a bunch of guys outside, adult men, and so I just go up to them and I show them the address written in Chinese on my phone. I'm hoping one of them can read it and see how close I am. I felt like I was pretty close. And so the guy nods and then he kind of waves another guy over. And this guy hops onto his scooter. Cars are not as common as scooters out here. Everybody drives scooters. It's like the main mode of transportation. And so he starts indicating for me to jump on the back. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So I jumped on the back of the scooter. And this guy takes me through these like little narrow alleys and up this hill and around the corner, and in about 90 seconds deposits me right at the front of this hidden studio. And I was just so grateful because I never would have been able to find that. And so it was, I really appreciate how kind people are and how willing they are to help a lost foreigner in a strange land.
So would you
say, one of these days I'll get it.
Would you say your career is full of more opportunity right now compared to when you were in LA?
It's hard to say. There are less jobs, certainly. In LA, the jobs are way more plentiful. But the type of jobs that I would do in LA, there is a lot more people who are my type. So here, if they are looking for a Western-looking person who kind of fits my profile, then there's a smaller category of people who could fulfill that role. So it kind of goes both ways.
Well, I'm happy for you. Like I said, I'm tickled pink by just what I've heard and learned about your adventures in Taiwan. So I hope you get more jobs. I hope to hear at least one new weird kind of story from your adventures there at least once a podcast. I think that's fair.
I've got another one booked for the last day of this month, so we'll see how that one goes. I'll let you know how that
better be good. It better be good.
I'm excited for this one.
Today we have three main topics. We have one story that just came out today, right before we recorded, that Smash Ultimate is getting a 8.1 update. I think it's out, that adds small battlefield. So instead of like the big battlefield stage, it's this tiny battlefield stage. And some more stuff. Did you hear about this before
I did
we
not.
Started?
I did.
Hi. Bye.
my 3-year-old just walked into the room. He's like, "What's going on? Where's my breakfast?"
That's fair. I think that's a totally fair question. So we have that. We also have GigaLeak, which is something I've been wanting to talk about for some time. If you're unfamiliar with GigaLeak, Nintendo had the source code from many of their Nintendo 64 era games leaked. A lot of this came out a few months back, but just recently we got assets and source code for Mario 64, for Ocarina of Time, for Star Fox 64. I mean, there are some things in this leak that I am fascinated with, and I'm going to do my best not to waste the entire podcast talking about this. As I get older, I've learned that I'm more excited about the history of video games, especially in the N64 era, because that was I was 10, 11 years old when the N64 came out, so it was like the system that defined my video game love. So I get more excited about the history and the oddities of like old school Nintendo than I do about Switch and new Switch games. So I'm going to do my best to stay on, I don't know, just try to stay focused and not drag this segment out too far. And then finally, we have Lego stuff to talk about. So Lego Super Mario's out officially. I went a little crazy and bought everything. And
I don't think anyone ever doubted that that's exactly what was going to happen.
I'm having a blast. I have been doing a set every night with my daughter. It is teaching her patience. And she is not on her iPad. She's not in front of the TV. Even though technically she is in front of her iPad, which I'll talk about here in a second. Should we just jump right into the Lego? Just go straight into Lego? Okay.
Because I want to hear about this. So, now, I mentioned last time that I wasn't sure if they were going to release day and date here in Taiwan, and I'm not sure if they have or not still.
Sure.
There's a Lego store that we pass every single day that's just on our normal route. It's not a Lego store, but it's a store that only sells Legos. And they do have a lot of sets that I'm familiar with, like the Harry Potter castle, the Disney castle, and a bunch of those other things. But the Mario sets have not appeared yet there. Although there is a Lego store pretty close by to me that I haven't had occasion to get to yet, so I'm going to check there and see if they have them. Otherwise, I haven't seen it. We also have Toys R Us still in Taiwan that does carry Legos. So hopefully between one of those, I'll be able to figure out where these sets are and maybe pick up a few myself.
It is fascinating. So first and foremost, there is a lot of sets. They have the standard kind of box set that comes out that comes with Mario. It comes with Bowser Jr., and then it comes with I think one Goomba and like two platforms. It's sitting behind me. I think you might be able to see it kind of on the table back there.
Oh, I do see it.
That is 60 US dollars for that set. It's not a very big set, but it comes with the brains of the operation. It comes with Mario. Mario has, and I'm sure many of you have seen this already, the LCD for the eyes, LCD for the mouth. He has an LCD kind of in his chest, and he can kind of interact with you. So he blinks, he laughs, you can shake him, and his eyes like spiral because he gets dizzy. He's neat. He really is. He's cute. I love the style of it. At first, when I first saw him, I was really hesitant about his design, and I thought Nintendo and Lego were crazy to go that route. But now that I have him in my hands, I think he's absolutely perfect. I have no issues with him whatsoever. And Mario is a glorified barcode scanner. So every one of the sets you get, all the enemies have these barcodes. They're just like these little discs. Let's see if I have... Yeah, here we go. So you can kind of see, and I know everybody can't see, but I just want to show TJ. There's barcodes on the top of the question block and the mushroom. All the enemies have them too. And Mario interacts with these things differently. So if you jump on the mushroom, Mario scans the barcode on the mushroom and you hear the power up of the mushroom. The same thing with the question block. Like the question block kind of goes off. You hear the sounds that you typically would hear when you hit a question block in the game. The enemies all have unique sounds, which is neat. And Mario is firmware upgradable. So you hook Mario up to your tablet or your phone, and he can upgrade, update. So if they come out with new sets down the line, let's say new enemies or new characters, they can program new like effects into Mario's brain. So if Luigi ever comes out, he could interact with Luigi or Princess Peach or different kinds of enemies. It's really neat. And once you have the $60 set, there is just so many other sets. They really know how to get you. The best one, in my opinion, is Bowser's Castle. It's $100. It's huge. It comes with this giant Bowser figure, which is just absolutely... It was a blast to put together. His castle is absolutely gigantic. It's totally interactive, so you can, like, take Mario and, like, jump on a certain area on the castle, and another area, like, blows up and, like, flies off. I mean, it's really, really neat. But incredibly expensive if you want to complete the entire thing. But I think the nice thing about Lego is you're never forced to do anything you really don't want to. You definitely need the starter pack. You need Mario. Without Mario, all the other stuff doesn't really work. But once you get Mario, you can just spend like $20 on like the Yoshi pack or something like that. You don't have to buy the big sets, but they're definitely fun. And I give Nintendo and Lego credit. I think I was a bit too hard on them when they first came out with these things, when they first announced them. They're really great. They're really a blast.
Is it giving you any like Amiibo vibes with the scanning aspect?
To a certain degree. It's not as sophisticated as an Amiibo. It's definitely Toys to Life to a certain degree. I mean, Mario plays games in these sets. So you kind of make the game up on your own. So you can have like two kids like say, okay, who can get the most coins in 30 seconds? And that could mean, you know, one kid is going to jump on this mushroom 10 times, which is going to give you one coin every time you do that. Or if you defeat an enemy, you get like two or three coins. So you have to kind of figure out what gives you the most coins. If you get a power up or the superstar, is that going to give you more coins? I mean, it's unique in that degree. And then all the points actually carry over to your iPad or your phone, and you can see who has the high score, which is kind of fascinating too.
I'm a little confused by how this works. And this was one of the things that confused me when they first announced the set. And we could see how interactive Lego Mario was collecting points and coins by jumping on enemies. And it looked like they were following this basic course, kind of reminiscent of how Mario side-scrolls in the games. But I was curious how you can't just win automatically, because you know what it takes to generate points. And like, how do you actually structure it in a way where there is game elements and not just function and response? So without just having...
You can hide things. So you have to use a lot of imagination with this thing. The game aspect is not for you and me, for sure. But was working today and I could hear my daughter setting up the sets and playing with them and having a blast with them. So she's definitely learning that too. However, like we set up Mario's house today, and there's this secret in Mario's house where you can take Mario and you can hit a certain area in his house and his roof opens up like this, and you can hide. Cool. You can hide a question block inside there that gives you more points. You can't see that thing unless you know it's there. So I think with all of the sets, if you have, let's say, even more than one, you can mix and match them, you can combine them, you can hide things, and you can set up a course in a way where you could say, okay, you have to go around this way, and you have to avoid the lava, you have to jump on this little platform, you have to keep Mario on it. There's certain platforms that spin around, and you have to put Mario on this tiny little narrow platform and get him to like go around a lava pit, but he can easily fall off. So that's another area where you could say, okay, you have to put Mario there, spin him around without him falling off. But a lot of imagination goes into it. You need to be able to say, this is not a video game. This is just, it's the way I used to play with my action figures, except now there's a high score mechanic.
Right. It sounds like you're describing normal imaginative toy play with heightened levels of interaction and interactivity between the toy and the user. So you have more functionality elements to kind of expand what you would produce with your imagination, and maybe even some Mario Maker elements where it might be more fun to play if somebody else built it or if someone else made the course, because that way you don't know those secrets and you don't know those mysteries and you don't know how they've combined all those elements, and that could be a pretty fun way to play it too. It's like maybe if you built a course and she needed to find where the hidden question block was, and she knows that it could be hidden in Mario's house. Maybe she has to go around the circular lava pit or whatever the case may be. That's pretty cool.
I'm going to be honest, though. The game mechanic is not going to get a lot of use in my home. My daughter doesn't seem to really care about the game. She cares about just making up little scenarios. So we put Yoshi together today, and Mario and Yoshi were having a conversation, and she was jumping on Yoshi's head, and Mario was riding Yoshi, and then Mario was taking a nap in his hammock. That's what it's all about, I think, for the most part. And obviously putting it together is half the fun, too, if you have the patience for that kind of thing.
Now, are these standard-sized Legos, or are they more like Duplo?
No, they're standard size.
Okay.
So they're standard size for the most part. I mean, some pieces are definitely bigger. But for instance, Bowser, he is made up of a lot of pieces. I think Bowser is at least 100 pieces on his own.
Wow. Just the figure?
Yeah, just him. Hang on. Let me just grab him real quick so I can show
you. Oh, yeah. I'm excited to see this. I've always known I was going to pick these sets up, but I haven't had a chance to get any hands-on impressions. So I'm excited to see what Jason's got. I could see his sets over there on the table put together.
So here is Bowser. He's relatively big in comparison to my hand, but he is made up of tiny, tiny little pieces. And these are standard Lego pieces. They did a great, great job with Bowser. I think he looks absolutely amazing. So they're definitely not Duplo. A lot of people have made that comparison, and I totally see why they would say that. They just look bigger. They're more of like the Lego fat heads or big heads or whatever they call them. Where you take all tiny pieces and you make a big character.
What's so cool about that is if Nintendo and Lego were to join forces and make Mario-themed sets, you would expect that they would be just like the Lego figures, where they have the arms, the legs, head. But they've made it so that you actually have to build Bowser not as a character, but as a Lego project. So it's completely different than just, say, a minifig. It is like having to use 100 little Lego pieces to build him as if he were a Lego construction. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Wow, what an innovative and unexpected way to approach that.
Yeah, to show the scale, I think that makes the most sense. And I think, like I said before, when I first heard about these things, I was upset. I wanted Nintendo to make the standard minifigs. I wanted it to be like exactly how all the other Lego sets addressed things, like the Harry Potter and the Simpsons sets. But I think they made the right choice. I really did. And I can't wait to see what they do next. I'm hoping we see a full-size Princess Peach castle at some point. I would love to see that. I'd like to see them branch off into other Nintendo properties too. The Legend of Zelda and Lego makes perfect sense. So who knows? I think some point down the line we might see even more amazing stuff like this. But
man, if they made a Zelda set, I would definitely go broke. You know what? They have started branching off in unexpected ways already with respect to the classic NES console that I noticed that you've also been building.
Yeah.
With the screen. Now, I took one look at that thing, and I was like, nope, not a chance. There's so many areas of it that are just one tone, and it's such a basic geometric shape.
Yeah.
That to combine that many small pieces to build like a big gray platform or big blue television screen, to me, is the same as doing a jigsaw puzzle that's only one color. Like, nothing about that feel better, appeals to me.
There's not a lot of gray in that set, believe it or not. A majority of that set is made up of lots of different colors that you can't see on the inside. In fact, have you seen the Easter egg yet?
I saw pictures that you posted that did have a lot of peculiarly colored Legos, but I don't know what the Easter egg is.
So the Easter egg, and spoilers for anybody who wants to like set this set up on their own, on the inside of the set, you're putting together this just intricate kind of thing. You're like, what are they making me build inside of this NES system? And when it's done, it's actually a map of World 1-2, the underground level. There's the platforms, the warp zone is there. It's really basic and really simplistic, but it's incredibly apparent once it's done. And it's completely made in like these just gorgeous black and blue and green Lego pieces. And you can essentially take off a piece of the NES and kind of unveil this World 1-2 inside of the system. And it was never anything that they said, hey, we're doing this. It's just kind of a fun nod to the fans. So
that's cool. That's a pretty awesome little trick to stick in there.
But the inside of the system is very, very multicolored. I mean, obviously you don't see it, but it's very multicolored. And if you've ever put together a Lego set, they put them together in like, you know, these little poly bags. I think this one has like 25 or 26 different bags of pieces. So it's very difficult to get lost for the most part. I think there was only one point where I'm like, I'm not sure how I'm supposed to piece this together. It was a pretty simple process. Just very, very time consuming.
I'm glad it's there for people who like it. It's certainly not the kind of thing that appeals to me about Lego. And Lego historically is reputed to have a very high price tag associated with its bigger sets.
Yeah.
And this one in particular is more than double the price of the original NES console, I believe.
Yeah,
it's released. So when you put it into context, I'm like,
$239.
Yeah, that's a steep price for a fake Nintendo console.
Very true. Lego typically retains its value. So
that's true.
At some point down the line, as long as you keep the box and the instructions and every piece, you can probably get your money back and then some. So I see it as an investment to a certain degree.
That's certainly one way to look at it. I'm sure that you can find somebody 15 years from now who would gladly pay you back what you paid. Because I'm not going to sit on the shelves for long. I would not be the least bit surprised if you could get considerably more.
But I have not started on the TV yet. I'm only on the system. So the system is done. It took me two days to complete the system.
Is it one-to-one scale?
No, not quite. So if you go on my Amiibo Jason Twitter account, I have the original NES next to the completed Lego NES.
Oh, okay.
It is slightly smaller.
All right. And then the television, in comparison to the console, how big would you say it is?
It's about double the size.
Oh, it's big.
It's big, for sure. I'm expecting the TV to take me 4 days to do.
Oh, man.
If I spend like 3 or 4 hours a day doing it. Maybe not three, maybe 2 hours a day doing it.
So you'd say it's somewhere about like between 6 and 8 hours to do that TV.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And between like maybe 6 and 10 hours to do the whole thing, or even more.
No, I'd say 10 hours is about right for the entire thing.
Oh, man.
Which is why I haven't started the TV yet. I want to do it. I'm not ready to open the bags yet, because I know the second I do, I'm committed. And yeah. I'm not ready to be committed yet.
Yeah, I feel that.
Or I'll be committed.
Not to go back too much, but did you also go for the blind bags in the,
I did.
The Mario
set? I got all of them.
How difficult was that?
If you buy a box, you get 2 complete sets.
I hate blind bags. I just absolutely hate them. And it's because I want to know what I'm buying.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to buy a whole bunch of, if I'm looking for a particular character, I don't want to have to buy 5 or 6 of the character I don't want. Can you tell what they are through the bag? Is it pretty easy?
It's not. I mean, it depends on who you are. There are people who do this very well. I'm not one of those
people.
I
don't have time for that stuff. I just want to pick something up and put it in my cart and get out of there.
It's why I went to Target right when they opened, and I bought a box. Before anybody else got there, I bought the entire box. They had multiple boxes. I didn't buy all of them. So I knew if I bought a box, I would at least get 1 full set. And I got 2 complete sets.
How much does each blind bag go for?
Technically, MSRP is $5.
Oh, dang, that's steep.
But Target had them for 4.
Okay, so how many are in a box then?
20.
Oh, dang. So forgive my bad math, but 5 times 20, that's an expensive purchase.
True, it is. I am planning, I don't think this is scalping.
No,
I'm
sure you
can selling my other complete set on eBay.
Do it, because I'm the exact kind of person who would want to buy that. I would rather buy your complete set on eBay.
People will spend more than what it would cost to, you know, buy 1 bag at a time.
Yes, so, because you're saving money by not having to buy duplicates
and
by not having to go hunt them down. So a convenience fee markup is more than justified in this case. That is not scalping. You are removing the mystery from the blind bag.
Yeah.
You are opening our eyes with the lens of truth.
You make me feel better about selling these things. I typically don't do that, but I knew that was the only way to like make it economical to get all the figures. I do like the blind bags. The enemies are great. They're really nice looking. They don't just come with the figure. They come with this little, like, I'll give you an example. This is Bob-Omb.
Oh, yeah,
so for those
awesome.
Of you at home who can't see it, it is Bob-Omb, who is made up of a big square brick, a little spinny thing on the back. He has feet. He has eyes. He's pretty big. And he's standing on top of a hill with a flower. He looks just very happy, very content with his life. Every
you know,
little
he's
set
the one
is
that,
like a diorama.
Bob-Omb is the one that really messes me up because I was, as soon as I heard blind bags, I was like, okay, I'm out. I'm buying all those sets. I'm definitely buying all those sets because I see me and the kids having a lot of fun with it. But I just don't want to touch those blind bags at all. No, I want no part of that. And then we've been playing Paper Mario a lot lately, and you develop a really close relationship with one of your party members who's a Bob-Omb. And my kids love Bob-Omb. And so I'm like, oh, man, I got to get that Bob-Omb. But
just send me your address. I got an
chances.
Extra Bob-Omb.
It's
I'll send
far,
you a
man.
Bob-Omb.
It's far.
I was actually thinking about seeing if I can find pink pieces for this and make Bombette from the original Paper Mario.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Or you can customize it.
I could very easily customize it. That shouldn't be a difficult project. Custom Conquest is back, baby!
Yeah, Lego edition.
I wonder how people would respond to that. Do you think they'd like that? I think they'd hate that.
I've given up on predicting what people like. But
yeah, that's a good point.
But I think if your daughter will like it, it's definitely a worthwhile effort for you to go for.
So I'm all about the blind bags. I think they're great.
Well, you've definitely gotten me more excited about playing these sets. I always knew I was going to buy them, but I didn't know if I was going to enjoy them or if I was just spending my money because I can't resist myself when it comes to certain Nintendo merchandise.
Yeah.
But hopefully this is going to be both. I definitely feel a new sense of inspiration to want to play them and try them.
Very nice. I'm glad I could inspire you to spend more money.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason. Thanks for that.
That's what I do. I'm all about consumerism here. So let's quickly jump into GigaLeak.
Yes.
Again, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that a bunch of Nintendo assets were leaked. And I do want to point out, this data was acquired illegally from either a hacker or somebody who had access to something from Nintendo. I think the consensus is, if you're unfamiliar, have you heard of the IQ player?
Is that a Chinese console?
So in China, video game consoles were banned for a very long time. I think that ban has recently lifted. So Nintendo got around these bans by creating an all-in-one hybrid console. So no cartridges, no system. It was a very big controller that hooked directly up to your TV. Very similar to if you went to the mall and saw those very bad plug-and-play systems with Nintendo games on it. Kind of like that. But it had all of the guts of a Nintendo 64 built into this controller. And all the games were digitally distributed and put on the IQ itself. And from what I've read about this leak, most of these leaks are coming from games that were were released on the IQ player in China. There were very, very few games released on IQ. Mario 64 was one of them. Star Fox 64 was another. Ocarina of Time was another one as well. So the consensus is at this point that most of this information ended up coming from a Chinese source. So that being said, I do not condone hacking. Obviously, I'm not going to condone taking all of this amazing information, but the information is out there at this point, so I still kind of want to talk about it.
Can I?
It's a difficult subject.
I hate that this happened. Like, as a Nintendo fan, obviously, I bought every Zelda, Hyrule Historia type book. I bought the encyclopedia and that art and artifacts because I love that kind of stuff. I bought the Mario 30th Anniversary Edition book because I'm into this stuff. This stuff is totally stuff that I'm all about. But something about the intellectual property of a company being compromised to this magnitude just makes me feel really sick. And I feel so horrible that this kind of stuff happens. This is the exact same thing as if you broke into somebody's business and you cracked their safe and you took out like the Coca-Cola recipe or the Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe. You're not just revealing game information that was withheld. You're also revealing proprietary code, and you're also revealing private conversations amongst employees. So this goes so far beyond a leak. It's not actually a leak at all. It's criminal.
It's a
intellectual property theft, and they've made it available to the public, which is super scary. And I think that this is going to really make Nintendo even more conscientious about their data and their proprietary information, which ultimately I think is going to push them into a direction where they're going to become more secure, which is good, but it's also going to definitely force them to have to put a lot of time, energy, and resources into security, which is time, energy, and resources that they're not putting into developing games. So the idea of somebody who worked in the entertainment industry for 15 years and still am entertainment industry adjacent, if somebody were to hack into my computer and take scripts that I wrote and stuff, and then my ideas that I thought were going to be great and I didn't get to release according to my own schedule, that would be really discouraging, really disheartening.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of people at Nintendo who feel very defeated by this, and I'm sure that they will persevere and I'm sure that they'll move on. But I think the ramifications of this are far-reaching, and whenever this is sorted out and the guilty parties are identified,
I think they already were.
I think that the book is going to get thrown at these guys because there's not a company in the world who isn't terrified of this happening.
So from what I understand, this was leaked out earlier this year. So you might remember back in May, the source code for the Nintendo Wii got leaked alongside loads of Nintendo Wii stuff. And from what I've heard, this leaker is the same person who leaked everything else. And I'm already fairly certain they caught the person that did it, but the data is starting to just, obviously more than one person had this data after he got it. So it sounds like it's starting to leak out slowly. Well, not so slowly anymore. It looks like they just one false swoop and put everything else out there. But most of what was leaked recently is Nintendo 64. Nothing GameCube that I've seen. Everything appears to be in that era of Mario 64, Ocarina of Time. And now I feel bad because you you guilted me so slightly for being very excited about this.
No, being excited about it makes sense because it's stuff that we are interested in, but it's so tainted. Like, I would like it so much more if Nintendo was decided, hey, you know what? We have all of these cool archived things that we've been saving back from one of your favorite eras of Nintendo history.
Yeah.
Enjoy. If they put it together in some kind of collection or some kind of book, or if they wanted to maybe reimagine some of those as games or introduce these in games. Like we've had this rumor for a while about a remade Mario 64. Who knows if some of these old ideas are going to be plugged into a newer version. We don't know why everything that was omitted from games were omitted. Sometimes it's because they just came up with better ideas and they didn't go with some of their initial concepts. And sometimes it's because you run out of time, you run out of money, and you got to get something out there. Or the technology isn't right and they can't figure out how to get it. But Nintendo is famous for returning to past ideas. They never throw anything out. They just wait until a better time to utilize those ideas. And some of the greatest games that we've ever had have been the reimagining of initially scrapped concepts.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, technically, Luigi was in Mario 64.
That's true for the DS. Yeah, the DS remake. So they did kind of implement the idea at some point. But it's frustrating, I think. And I definitely get what you're saying, where the excitement that you feel as a Nintendo fan to want to experience, just suck up all of this information, and especially somebody who's interested in Nintendo history, as we both are, this is information that definitely strikes us in our interest bone. But at the same time, you feel just dissatisfaction and frustration for the company that we enjoy and that we love because we know that they did not sanction or approve any of these releases.
And it doesn't help that I was living these leaks, obviously from NintendoWire.com. We were doing nothing but sifting through this. We did make the decision as a team not to host any of the leaked assets whatsoever. No photos, no anything. The only thing that we host are tweets that other people are posting things on. So nothing is technically on a Nintendo Wire server from this. So Nintendo, if you're listening, we're not doing anything bad. but the leaks are interesting. I mean, obviously how they came about, not so hot. They range anywhere from Luigi assets being found in Mario 64 source code to uncompressed audio clips of Star Fox 64, which I've listened to. And it's fascinating listening to this high-definition voice samples of games that I played when I was a kid. They sound like they were just recorded today, which is just utterly fascinating. Enemies from Mario 64 that have never been seen before, beta enemies. Ocarina of Time had beta assets for unused dungeons, unused enemies. Very interesting things that you would hope would be something you'd see like in an art book or something down the line.
Sure.
But what's fascinating about this is because it's the source code, people have hacked these things back into the game.
Yeah.
So instead of being in a book or being in like a hypothetical screenshot, somebody has reconstructed the dungeon from the source code, put it into Ocarina of Time, and it played through it, which I find to be just utterly fascinating.
It's amazing that that could be done. Like, the people who have the intelligence and the programming knowledge to be able to achieve something like that is really phenomenal. Imagine you're a designer and you make this dungeon and it doesn't make the final cut, and now all of a sudden it is getting played.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it would be a sense of vindication, like, wow, all my hard work, players are finally able to experience it, or if it's like, oh, you turds, you just totally are playing something that was never meant to be played.
My thought is the designers probably wouldn't care. I think it's more of a corporate issue than anything else, except for the guy that had his porn history leaked in this source code, which apparently is something that was in some of the source code too. That being said, if you want more information about that, look it up. It's fascinating. I don't think they actually said that the person who had that in their source code, so at least that's something. But I was reading a story about how there's this guy who is, his entire life is dedicated to preserving just old video game stuff. And back in the day, before Ocarina of Time came out, there was very little media that showed off the game. But there was some. There was some videos that Nintendo released either at Space World or private events, and that made its way online after years just in this terrible, like, absolutely degraded video format. That showed some of the assets from these leaked dungeons. And this guy said, you know, for the past 2 years, I was looking all over. I was talking to people in the industry, talking to people that were at events, saying, have you taken a picture? Like, back in 1997, did you take a photo at this event that I can try to piece together what was going on in this dungeon? And then all of a sudden, one day, the dungeon is just playable. Like, I can actually see it and play it. I think from a gaming history perspective, it's fascinating. But at the same time, too, I get what you're saying as far as the implications of how they were found and how we got them. It taints it to a certain degree. I still get excited about it, but you're right. I mean, it is tainted to a certain degree.
Yeah, it kills me. It actually kills the enjoyment for me. I don't think that there's anything unethical about reporting the news. This is big news, and it's out there, so it's not like the bell can be unrung.
Yeah,
it's there. So, looking at this information, that it is what it is. But for myself, I just have to pretend that it doesn't exist. I think that's the only road that I can go. I'm interested in it. And we're talking about it, and I'm discussing it. And there's that. And I don't want to say I enjoy hearing. I find it interesting hearing about this. But at the same time, if somebody were to present me with the opportunity to be able to play as Luigi in this reconstructed code and this reverse engineered dungeon, I would probably have to take a pass.
Have you seen the Octorok? Beta Octorok in Ocarina of Time?
No, it's so cute.
It's so cute.
Man.
It's amazing. He's great. From what I remember, there is... So I actually pulled up this thing. So Ocarina of Time had a beta Octorok, which is like this really cute pink Splatoon-looking squid. He looks just like it was pulled out of the original Legend of Zelda and then made into 3D. There was a different knight. Epona had a different style to a certain degree. It looks like Majora's Mask had some interesting things. Somebody ended up pulling something out of Majora's Mask source code, proving that the original game was supposed to be 7 days long instead of three.
Oh, interesting. A whole week.
So they have all of these interesting images that correspond with all 7 days that were supposed to be in the game.
Man, could you imagine how much harder that game would be if it was 7 days?
Oh, 3 days was tough enough.
3 days was tough enough.
Majora's Mask is still the game that frustrated me the most out of any Zelda game I've ever played. I beat it, but I think I enjoyed it the least. But at the same time, too, it holds a very special place in my heart. Like, can you not enjoy something, but at the same time love it? Is that possible?
It totally is. It's totally possible.
I love everything Majora's Mask represents. I hate how I felt playing it.
That's exactly how I feel about Mario Odyssey. So there. Now you can take that feeling and you finally understand what I felt. I like what Mario Odyssey represents. I did not enjoy playing it at all.
Fair enough. I finally see.
But I will say, though, since we're talking about it, Majora's Mask is, for me, the most intimate of all Zelda experiences. You really had to get to know all of the NPCs in a way that you don't have to do with any of the other games.
Yeah.
And the decisions that you made had such far-reaching ramifications for the characters, where you had to make some tough choices. If you saved one person, it meant letting another person suffer the fate. And so that one, up until Breath of the Wild, I would say was my most meaningful of all Zelda experiences. Even more than Ocarina of Time, even more than A Link to the Past. So that is definitely super high on my list. And that new information is being revealed now is amazing. Okay, it never even crossed my mind that the game would be 7 days long because of how prohibitively difficult even 3 days was.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It is. And like I said, there's a lot of information out there at this point. Nintendo hasn't been as aggressive with this as I thought they would be. All of the videos are still up. Obviously, any of the code itself, like the source code itself, Nintendo's making sure isn't being hosted in any public-facing place. But all of the videos that are showing in-depth looks at all of this code, Nintendo is completely within their right to take down. And so far, they've yet to do so.
I wonder if they're just developing a game plan, because isn't the kind of thing you can really clean up. Like I said, you can't unring the bell. It's not the kind of thing that could just disappear overnight. But they're going after aggressively the ones that are the most damaging to which is the stuff that has proprietary code. If you start getting your code out there, then anybody can start developing games based on the work that you've already put in. So that's all of Nintendo's R&D that now anybody who understands programming can utilize.
Yeah, Mario 64 is running natively in Windows right now,
which is something that never was intended to happen and shouldn't be able to happen.
In 4K. In 4K ultra widescreen. I'm not saying I've played it, but I've heard about it.
It's amazing, because who wouldn't want to? Who wouldn't want to be able to do that? And so it's the kind of thing that you hope Nintendo at some point does, but they don't. And there's a lot of very, very intelligent people out there who can easily just do it because they don't have the same considerations that Nintendo has to have.
Yeah.
Now, is it intellectual property theft? Is it copyright infringement? Absolutely it is. But that doesn't stop people from doing it. So it's... knowing that it can be done is awesome.
Yeah.
And it just makes me wish that Nintendo would do it. But it's a tricky spot for me. I have such a strong moral objection to it that it prevents me from being able to experience it.
Yeah.
But I'm also excited to know that it can be done. So if these programmers can do it, Nintendo can do it if they wanted to. They just need to pull the trigger. Yeah, man. This is a tricky one. It's complicated.
I won't go into too much more at this point. If you want to see more information about it, again, we're not hosting anything on NintendoWire.com, but you can find all of the information on our website, NintendoWire.com. You can take a look and see what specifically was in these leaks. Again, we don't host any of the source code or any of the photos or videos that were found in this leak, but if you want some information on it, you can find it there. Why don't we move on to our last topic then, which is the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate update that just came out. It looks like it's version 8.1.0. It introduces Small Battlefield, a brand new stage, which is a small version of Battlefield Super, I guess.
Crazy intense action. I'm about that.
Say you can now select any stage specific music for the Battlefield, Small Battlefield, and Big Battlefield, and Final Destination stages. So if you're looking to customize your gaming experience, you can now do that. And then they have updated some things for online play. It looks like they made some minor changes. So it looks like the major thing here is the music and the small battlefield. Does any of that, like, do anything for you?
Well, I like small battlefield. I think that's cool. Curating the music is something I never got into because there are thousands of tracks. There's way too much music for me to specifically go through, and I love so much of it that I just kind of accept whatever the game presents to me, and yeah, that's good enough. There's not really much there to get me jumping around with excitement. I think Small Battlefield's a cool little addition, but what I really want is just, I want a mode that's not there, basically. I like Smash. Yeah. I really enjoyed World of Light. I think I enjoyed World of Light far more than most people. I loved the spirits. I loved collecting the spirits. I liked hunting through the world map that they had. I liked all those specific challenge battles, but I want something kind of like a Smash Run on the 3DS version. Yeah. Just something where I can have some way to be able to play as these characters that is not just fighting other characters. I want to be able to go out and fight bad guys. Maybe something like, I think it's unrealistic to expect any kind of Subspace Emissary business going on, but I want something like what Subspace Emissary presented, where you can progress with these characters and fight other bad guys.
Yeah.
Other than just a fighting game. I want the Smash engine in a non-fighting game. I want the Smash engine in like a beat-em-up, basically. Sure. I want a Smash beat-em-up. That would be maybe the ultimate game.
You never know.
Game.
We might see it.
They got to do something. Got to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I haven't even turned my Switch on in like 3 weeks.
Too busy playing Legos and modifying
hardware. My life has been more, I've been playing more original Game Boy than anything else right now. Again, I think it's the reason why GigaLeak is so interesting to me. I am really into retro games right now. There is nothing Nintendo has out right now, with the exception of Origami King, sort of.
I've been playing that a lot.
I keep coming back to it.
I have to say, I have heard the criticisms from the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
And they do not affect me. There were some people who were really upset about this recent interview. Did you hear about that interview that came out about Origami King?
About how they they can't take creative liberties with the characters?
Maybe that was part of it. But what a lot of people were taking objection with was how they were saying that certain elements of the game are put in so that the game can appeal to casual players, and then other features were removed to not alienate casual players, but that they tried to strike a balance that was going to please long-running fans of the series, hardcore fans, and also the casual player.
Yeah.
I would say I'm more than the casual player. I'm a devotee, but I'm not hardcore. I'm somebody who really, really likes Nintendo games, and I play a lot of Nintendo games, but if I got on Fortnite, I'd be killed in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So I'm not. If I went on Smash Online, if I could survive the lag, I would die from whoever was fighting me.
Sure.
But this version of Paper Mario is more my speed than any Paper Mario that's been out there. And I think it's because it does have the turn-based battle mechanics, which I hate. I hate turn-based. But because I can impact it, I can make the hit on me less by having good timing with my block, and this goes back to Mario RPG, so this isn't new. And Mario RPG I also loved. But what this game also has is some real-time combat where you run around and you fight certain enemies with the hammer, and a lot of puzzle-solving elements. So to me, and so good writing. The writing is so good. It just can't be overstated.
Yeah, that's the entire reason I want to play it.
There's a million Toads in here, and Toads look exactly the same, but yet each one is so unique and their little sense of humor is so funny that I mentioned last time how it was a really chatty game and maybe the chattiness was putting me off a little bit. Yeah, you can do a lot of reading, but usually it's going to be worth your time. I feel like if the ribbons are any indication, there's 5 ribbons, I think, in the game, and I have almost managed 4 of them. So I feel like I'm getting towards the end.
Sure.
there's intermediary encounters that you have to do between each ribbon. So for people who haven't played it, I don't really want to get into it. But you got a good amount of bosses and a good amount of regular enemies. Maybe the puzzle spin board is wearing a little thin for me, and I just try to get through that as fast as I can. But anytime I'm playing the game generally, or I'm doing real-time combat, the game is, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's a game that I really like, and I've been playing it with my kids, and they love the game. They love watching me play it. They've been begging me for the last 3 days now that the plot is really starting to get deep. They've been begging me to play the game. Daddy, please play Origami King now. We want to get more. We want to see what happens next. And it's fun to be able to share this experience with them. And also to reference back to last week where you're like, hey, I hear this game has the feels. And I just immediately brushed it off. It's like, yeah, I just don't see how that's possible. Well, I take it back. The game does have the feels.
It got spoiled for me. I'm not going to mention it, but it did.
Yeah. There was at least one moment where I had to look at my kids and make sure that they were all okay. They were wide-eyed, staring at the screen in disbelief. And I'm not crying or anything, but I'm feeling the tugs on the heartstrings. I'm like, wow, Nintendo.
Especially because this thing does what these things do.
Yeah.
In every other instance.
I know.
Like, we see this thing happen to this thing 100 times,
which
in every other game.
I know, which is what makes it so much more impactful.
So,
if you'll pardon the pun.
Okay, I am going to pick it up tomorrow, and we will have a chat next week about it.
Yeah, I'm curious to get your impressions because you like RPGs a lot more than me. And
yeah,
this game is just not that. It's not that at all. It's like an adventure puzzle game. So I think
that's what turns me off to it. But
yeah, a lot of people.
Everything except the combat looks great.
The combat is really fun when it's not the combat, when it's not the turn-based combat. There's this island in... I don't think this is a spoiler to say. There's this island where you can fight a lot of the enemies that you fight in the overworld in like rapid succession, kind of like a boss rush mode. I spent an hour doing that. It was so fun. I was like, I wish the whole game was like this. I wish I could just run around. You know how in Earthbound, if you're way, way more powerful than an enemy and you sneak up on it or something,
you just
automatically beat it? You could do that in this game too if you're way more powerful than them and you hit them. So in the overworld, you can strike them to get an advantage. You either jump on certain enemies or hit them with your hammer. And if you're more powerful than them, they just poof, and you don't even go into the battle screen.
Nice.
I wish the whole game was like that, where I could just fight every single enemy in the overworld, and I never had to go to the puzzle screen. I wish the puzzle was a mini game, because I do like it, and it is pretty cool, and it's creative and inventive, and it forces me to have to think in a way that I'm not used to thinking, and my brain doesn't naturally do that, but I've noticed I've been getting better at it.
Yeah.
I feel like it maybe is a little too much, and it's wearing a little thin for me. But anytime I'm running around smashing stuff with my hammer, I'm happy. And they find a way to make everything feel so satisfying. And the pace of the game is really good until you hit a battle, and they're like, this is going to take me about 2 or 3 minutes. And that slows the pace down. But other than that, I'm really, really enjoying it a lot. I wish I had fewer RPG
elements. I look forward to talking
to you
about it next week, my initial impressions of it.
And then one more follow-up on something that you mentioned last time. You asked me if I had played the updated Mario Kart widescreen mode, and I was really excited to try it. And I wasn't sure how much it would impact the experience, but one course, I was like, oh, this is way better. This is way better. This is exactly how this game should be played. And I thought, why do I like this so much more? I was like, oh, because I'm holding the game in the orientation of a controller.
Yeah.
So suddenly it was more like holding the N64 controller or any of the other, the Pro controller, any of the other ones I've ever played these games with. So
you're back?
I really think, kind of. I'm not playing it. I'm playing it as a time killer. So if I'm sitting on the MRT and I've got a few minutes until my next stop, I'd rather sit there and play Mario Kart Tour for 20 minutes than nothing. And I don't bring my Switch anywhere because to me it's not practical as a portable device. outside of the house. Maybe if I was going to take a long trip, like a plane ride, but
sure.
just for traveling across the city, I don't do that. So having the phone, Mario Kart is a viable option again.
All right.
I'm not going to spend any more money on it, but yeah, for running a few courses, I actually think going back to a legit mainstream Mario Kart game might be hard for me. It's so simplified that when I went back and I played 8, I was like, oh,
yeah.
No, this game is making me worse at 8. So, I don't know.
Man.
I'm curious where they're going to go when they actually do make another mainline iteration on the Mario Kart series.
I haven't played the widescreen mode yet. I'm going to try it out tonight, so I'll let you know how that goes too.
Cool, man.
TJ, where can the good folks at home find you?
Check me out at Custom Conquest on Twitter. And while we're on that topic, I think I have one more Custom Conquest in the tank.
What?
I want to talk to you about it a little bit after the show. So sorry for the little tease, but I've recently got some inspiration for one more.
Inspiration? I can't wait. That sounds great.
And when that does eventually appear, it will be on the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel.
Yes. Rock and roll McDonald's.
How about you?
If you want to find me, you can find me over at NintendoWire.com or my personal Twitter account at AmiiboJason. Otherwise, you can find me on YouTube as well. It's youtube.com/NintendoWire. I've been putting up more content. I think we've had 4 videos in the past week, which is a new record for us for the whole pandemic timeline. I made the ultimate Nintendo GameCube, which I'm stoked about. I have a partnership with somebody who I'm not going to mention yet that I'm going to make some really cool stuff coming up. And it's Custom Conquest for your game console. So stay tuned for that. It's a series I've been wanting to do for a while, and I just got the parts, and I can't wait to start putting it together. And we have a new D-Make up on Nintendo Wire's YouTube channel. Super Mario 64, made on the original Game Boy by the amazing Tom Brown. He made the Breath of the Wild D-Make. He made the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate D-Make. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out as well. But that's
Tom
it from
amazing.
Us.
All those are so good.
I'm glad you like them. But as always, until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.